So our gospel lesson comes from the Gospel of Matthew, as you can see, verses 31 through 40 in the 25th chapter. This version is the Eugene Peterson's The Message, and you can follow along on the screen behind me. When the Son of Man comes in his glory with all of his angels, he will sit on his royal throne. The people of all nations will be brought before him, and he will separate them as a shepherd separates the sheep from their goats. He will place the sheep on his right and the goats on his left, and then the king will say to those on his right, "My Father has blessed you. Come and receive the kingdom that has been prepared for you before the world was created. When I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. And when I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. When I was a stranger, you welcomed me. And when I was naked, you gave me clothes to wear. When I was sick, you took care of me. And when I was in jail, you visited me." And then the ones who please the Lord will ask, "When? When did we give you something to eat or drink? When did we welcome you as a stranger or give you clothes to wear or visit you while you were sick or in jail?" And the king will answer, "Whenever you did it for any of my people, no matter how unimportant they seemed, you did it for me." There's a Latin saying that when, if I put that there, I'll forget it's there. I'll give it to my wife to hold. There's a Latin saying that says when we're sick, that we reveal who we are. And sometimes we joke around about that. We say, well, when a man is sick, he reveals just how much of a baby he is. Oh, I'm so sick. Oh, I can't work. I can't do anything. And when a woman is sick, you know, they just keep on going. They don't have time to be sick. They keep on doing all the things they have to do. And that may be kind of true. I know it's in my case, it's true. But the thing is, when we are sick, there's more to what we can reveal about ourselves than just whether we're babies or not in that moment. Sickness has a way of showing also our faith. When we're sick, it can test our faith. Because we sometimes get caught up in this old belief, this old system that even Jesus had to deal with and was dealt with even long before he was around walking the earth. This idea that sickness is somehow a punishment from God. Remember the story of Job? Job suffered so much. Everything he loved and cared about was taken from him. He had been doing so well, and he pleased the Lord, and he was so righteous. And suddenly, everything starts to happen negatively to him. He's getting sick, and he loses his children. It's all terrible. And his friends come to him. They see him in such distress, and so they want to help. And so they try to tell him, using the theology of the day, they look for a reason that this sickness has come upon him, because they believe that nothing this terrible could happen unless God had somehow had a grievance against him. And so they kind of go after him and say, "Well, what did you do wrong?" And they keep trying to push this idea that somehow he has sinned and God is punishing him for this. Jesus dealt with the same problem. When the disciples saw a man who was born blind, they were still of that mindset. And they said, "Jesus, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" And don't we still find ourselves sometimes thinking the same idea? Don't we get caught up in that when something happens and we say, "Why, God, what did I do wrong? Why are you punishing me?" Especially if it's a really major illness. We may find ourselves questioning, like, did we do something to offend God that he would allow such a terrible thing to take place in our lives? Well, for Job, the answer never came. He had done nothing to deserve it. You and I, reading the first chapter, we get a little clue in the story that this just seems to be some game between Satan and God. God's so pleased with him, and Satan says, yeah, well, you give him everything. If he didn't have all this, he wouldn't be so righteous. And so God says, I'll prove it to you. Go ahead and do what you want to him. And so he goes through all kinds of suffering. And then when God does finally speak to Job, he never gives him an answer. There's no answer given to, well, this is why you had to go through all this, Job. Instead, he says, who do you think you are? Why should you know all that happens and have a reason for everything? And Jesus says to the disciples who asked the same question about the blind man, he says, neither sin, but this is for the glory of God. And then we have the Apostle Paul, who also suffered a great deal as a servant of God, suffered a lot more than he had beforehand. And I don't know what I'm looking for. So Paul's suffering so much that at one point he prays to God because, as he describes it, there's a thorn in his flesh. Something has afflicted him. And he prays three times. He says, I pray to God, please remove the thorn from my flesh. It could be an illness. It could be something else. We're not given the answer, and that's a good thing. Because we don't need to know what it was, so we can all identify with Paul. We can all identify that sometimes we have some kind of thorn in our flesh. It can be a situation. It can be an illness. It can be something we're struggling with within ourselves. And Paul gets only one answer from God. And what is that? Does anybody remember?
My grace is sufficient for you.
My grace is sufficient for you. It's good enough. This is all you need. And that's the answer that God wants us to hear for ourselves too. His grace, his gift of anything we're facing is enough for us. Now you might not think of illness as a gift. You might not think of cancer as a gift. You might not think of a lot of things that happen to you as gifts. To any of us, anything that happens that we see as a negative, we think of these as something terrible, as obstacles to being able to live our lives the way we want to live them. And in some cases, that's the truth. They are obstacles. But as Paul discovered with his thorn in his flesh, once he turned it over to God and recognized that all he really needed was the grace of God, that he could live with this affliction, he began to be a better disciple for God. He began to understand, as he would say, as he says, and I'm paraphrasing it, he learned to live without getting a big head. Because Paul could easily have found himself looking at all the things that were happening and all the good he was doing and started to just be thinking really highly of himself. Well, I'm a better Christian than they are. I'm a better disciple than those disciples. I do more than anybody else. In fact, at one point he does share some of those thoughts as he thinks about them. But he also recognizes, because of this affliction, that all of that doesn't matter. That God is not impressed with how great Paul is. And the affliction that he has to deal with gives Paul a sense of connection and community. Because as he suffers, he realizes, I'm just like everybody else. I'm not better than them. And I'm not really worse than them. But we're all the same. And now he can relate to people. Now he can have a communication with people. People can also relate to him because they understand he's going through these things, that he's suffering. And yet, he's not letting it bring him down. He's taking it and finding a way to bless God with it, to be a better disciple. Not than other people, but a better disciple than he would be without. I look at like Eric's dad, you know, he's been going through just before I got here, this accident happened and all he's been through and the setbacks. And yet he keeps looking up to God and he keeps trying to keep his faith strong. See, some people lose their faith. But some people, they lean into their faith. They look up to God and say, Lord, I don't know how to handle this without you. And God says, I'll help you. Because my grace is enough. And you can do whatever you need to do with whatever you have. So, as the Latin proverb goes, if we are going to see what God, or who we are, sickness brings out the best and worst in us. It reveals what's really going on with our faith. And it's not about, you know, I think we all want to be healthy all the time, of course. And as I get older and I have these older person problems that are beginning to happen, and I'm realizing, you know, I'm just like you. I'm just like my parents and what they had to go through. And I'm realizing that, you know, I grew up, maybe it's just me, but when I was younger, I kind of thought I was immortal. And you don't think you're going to die. And I thought when I was a teenager, I thought, I'm never going to lose my hair. I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to have that long hair that I loved and I would keep it forever. And I would never get old like other people would get old. I'd be cool no matter how old I get. I see people with walkers and I'd be like, I'll never have to use a walker. But I might. I'm realizing that I have to accept that I'm a human being and this body is a temporary body. Alex Karras, the football player from the Detroit Lions, and maybe some of you who are old enough remember the show Webster, where he and his wife, Susan Clark, played husband and wife, and they adopted Webster, Webster was a little kid whose parents had died, and so they were raising him. And then we saw a good, you know, the softer side of Alex Karras. Well, eventually Alex, a few years ago, succumbed to the injuries that he had sustained over the years playing football, the concussions that eventually caused his brain to have dementia and some other things affected him. And he was part of the lawsuit against the NFL on that. But he said at one point about what strength really was. Here was a guy who was tough, macho guy, strong, out there on the football field, taking people down. He was a defensive tackle. And here he is talking about what real strength is. And he described it like this. He says, it's not, and I'm paraphrasing it, but it's not muscles that make you strong as much as your spirit. It's not the muscles that made him a strong person. It's not the places he could go and push people down and show dominance, because he even said, you know, being dominant over people is not powerful as much as serving people. He got it. He got it as a guy who had the muscles, had the strength, and he realized that that was not what God had called him to be. That this is not how we show true strength. True strength comes taking our illnesses that we have and leaning into them and saying, all right, Lord, I'm sick. I can't do this alone. I need your help. I know that your grace is enough for me. And so if I have to be sick for a while or if I end up being sick for the rest of my life, I can live with it. You know, Jesus didn't heal everyone that he came into contact with. There were many people in Israel that were still blind after he left. Many people who were still deaf. Many people died who he didn't bring back to life. Many people who were sick that lived with their illnesses. We like to, you know, when I read the Gospels when I was younger, I pictured the whole nation being healed, but it wasn't. But Jesus didn't leave that situation and say, well, it's all finished. That's all I can do and it's done. He said, no, I'm going to provide for the world to keep on taking care of one another. So as we heard him say, he says to his disciples, he says to those listening, when he sits on his throne and he divides people up, he says to the sheep on the right, he says, you were there for me when I needed you. If I was thirsty, you gave me a drink of water. If I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. When I didn't have clothes to wear, you clothed me. When I was sick, you comforted me. You were there to be with me. Notice he doesn't say, you healed me. He says, you were there with me. When I was in prison, you visited me. And the people, surprisingly, have no clue about this. When did we do any of those things? They're not even aware that they've done these things. They just did them. You know how when you do something nice and you don't remember you did it? It's just the way of who you are. And somebody will say, thanks. I want to thank you for that time you did this for me. And you're like, I did? Oh, yeah, okay. It's because it's who you are. Jesus provided for the comfort, for the care of the world by calling his disciples and saying, this is what you should do as disciples. Because when you do it for the least, the most unimportant people, even the most unimportant people in the world, when you do something for them, that was me. It was me you did. It was me when I was sick that you were there for. I chose that picture because, one, the sick man looked a little like our image of Jesus. We don't like to think of Jesus being sick. But he is when it's one of us. He is when somebody's sick. It's Christ. This young man is dying of AIDS. His father is there with him. Can't stop it. Can't cure it. But he's with it. You'll see more of the picture at the end. That's what we're called to do, brothers and sisters. We're called to be with those who are sick. Sometimes it's easy to forget them, ignore them. And then later say, I'm sorry I never got around to sending you a card or calling on you or whatever. The truth is, that's one of the most important things. Would we say that to Jesus? Sorry, Jesus, I didn't get around to seeing how you're doing. If you know someone who's feeling sick, someone who's struggling with a problem, even a card, sometimes a card is the best thing because that's something they can keep. They can hold on to and read it over and over again. A phone call or a visit is helpful too if you can. We're called, brothers and sisters, to take our illness and to use it as a stepping stone towards faith. How we handle it and how we handle the sickness of others says a lot about who we are. Amen?